Hello?
Good evening, good evening. Welcome to tonight's episode of All About Service Dogs, hosted by your host, yours truly, Doc Vinsel. Tonight, we'll be featuring Margaret Glenn. She will be telling us about some of her research and some of the research that she's involved in with service dogs in the workplace. And if she has enough time, maybe she'll get into some of the laws and rules pertaining to service dogs that we might want to chat about or that might have just changed or might be up in the air. But that's kind of where the show is going. So call a friend, call a family member, tell them to press the link and listen in. And if we get that far in the show, I will ask if you have questions, you can call in at 646-668-2499. You call in with that question and press the 1 on your phone keypad, and we'll get you right on the air. Now, you can also call in at 646-668-2499. If you just want to listen to the show, you can call in and listen, and you won't be heard, and you can just listen to the show just as if you pulled it up here on your computer. So that's two ways to listen. Let me ask that you follow the show. There's a little button if you're on your computer that asks you to follow. If you do follow, that helps you to get notices of upcoming shows. Sometimes we're not on 5 days a week. If I don't have guests or anything interesting to say, I'm not going to be on. So this will let you know when we're going to be on and what the guest will have to say and who the guest is. So having said that, Margaret, please introduce yourself, say hello to the people, and then we'll dive in.
Thank you. I appreciate being on. My name is Margaret Glenn. I'm an associate professor and coordinator of the program in clinical rehabilitation and mental health counseling at West Virginia University. And I have been in the field of rehab counseling for, over 35 years. And a few years ago, I had the grand opportunity to be awarded a distinguished rehabilitation and disability research fellowship from the National Institute of Disability and Rehabilitation Research to look at what makes, what are the characteristics of a successful service dog team in the workplace. So that's a little bit about who I am. I've been around disability all my life. My mom was admissions director at a place called Woodrow Wilson Rehab Center in Virginia, and it served people with significant disabilities. So I grew up around the issue, and I grew up also loving dogs. So this research brought two of my favorite things together. That's a little bit about me. And
well,
I'm a service dog in training who is in my house pacing right now. Okay, go ahead.
Well, I just said that's super, and what I want to ask you is, you said a couple things, and since I come out of the same discipline, I made a couple assumptions.
Mm-hmm.
And you just tell me if these assumptions are correct or incorrect.
Okay.
You have a PhD in some kind of counseling or education field, do you not?
Yes, I have a doctorate in counseling from George Washington University. And a master's degree in rehabilitation counseling.
There you go. So you are pretty adept in the whole research thing. You've had to do a little research in your time.
Yes, they had that thing called a dissertation that scares every doctoral student to death. Yes.
There you go.
Yes, I did. Yeah. I tend to like to look at the issues that nobody's looking at the time. So at that time, my interest is how voc rehab counselors are going to serve people with HIV/AIDS. So I've done a few different kinds of research projects.
Okay. Well, that gives one thing. You know, some people wouldn't have been able to make that assumption
mm-hmm.
because
mm-hmm.
they don't know how associate and assistant professorships work, and they don't know how the educational grants work, research grants work, and who they give them to and all that. So that builds a bit of credibility for some of the people wondering, why should I listen to her? Now, let's talk about... Well, there you go. We got to do that. Now, let's talk a little bit about you and service dogs. What is your relationship to the service dog, and how did you get involved in the service dog industry, service dog community, what have you?
It was a rather serendipitous, to be honest with you. I was doing a lot of work in other areas, addictions and wellness and things like that. We have a program at West Virginia University that trains students to learn to train service dogs. It's called the Hearts of Gold program. The dogs that are trained and are able to become service dogs go on to be placed with veterans. They predominantly just do PTS and ability dogs. And it's been around for a long time. It's a nice program. They also have an arm. The teaching assistants go out to our local minimum security prison. There's happens to be a unit of veterans there, and they wanted to be able to train dogs themselves for veterans. So we have a couple of different programs going on here at West Virginia. A friend of mine who's also owns the clinic, that vet clinic that I have taken all my animals to, and is an MD, and was at NIOSH, the National Institute of Occupational Safety and Health, which is part of the Centers for Disease Control, had a funded program going on called, let me see if I can get this right, Returning Our Veterans to Employment and Reintegration, the Rover Project. They have done some surveys of the industry, of the training industry, as well as people, veterans who may or may not have used service dogs or had pets that helped them in their process of reintegration. And now they're undertaking a clinical study to investigate the effect of service dogs on productivity, stress levels, et cetera, and simulated work activities for veterans with a dog, without a dog, with a familiar dog, so they can begin to provide possible evidence that they do make a difference in the workplace. So that was all going on around me, and a few years ago I decided to quit being the chair of my department and decided that I wanted to take a sabbatical. I wrote a grant to the National Institute of Disability and Rehabilitation Research and received funding for a year to do what we call mixed methods, basically a survey, to establish from the community of people who have service dogs, people who train service dogs, and also voc rehab counselors who have worked with people who had service dogs successfully, what are the elements of, they believe, are the elements that comprise successful service dog partnerships. And we got a nice response from that. And I went on to travel the country a little bit, interviewing some extraordinary people who had service dogs in their lives and were working successfully. And I was able to interview someone who was using her dog for diabetic alert, another one for epilepsy response, a mobility dog, a stability dog, and a dog that served psychiatric medical alert services. So it was actually extremely fortunate. I really probably... somebody was looking down on me when I got that grant because it was a great way to spend your sabbatical learning how effective dogs can be in your life. So that's how I got into it, sort of a roundabout way. And now I actually do some work. I continue to do some work with the Hearts of Gold program and helping to socialize some of the dogs that have been to prison. Or I just took the volunteer handlers course so that I knew all the commands and could keep it consistent for the babes. Yeah.
Okay, you said a bunch of good stuff on how you got involved, and I'm not even going to try to get back into any of that. But I do have a couple questions for my own, and maybe somebody else might be interested. That program over there at the University of West Virginia, I've heard a few things about it. Of course, I'm in a group for service dog folks, Virginia. Who could get in that program, and how does that program work, or can you speak to that?
When you say get into it, become participate in the training?
Yeah, you know, as a student.
Okay. Oh, okay. They're undergraduate courses. You can come here and participate in the courses, and as part of an undergraduate degree or separate from it, if you can get into the classes. They're pretty popular, and they're expanding all the time. But that's, we want to eventually create an owner training program that will allow people to, since there really isn't enough training out there for all the people who want trained dogs, there's some ways to create programs that would allow people to train their own dogs. Time intensive, but we're hoping that maybe we can serve more of our area if we can organize a certificate program like that. The program that we have at the university right now are three separate classes, varying in different. They advance as you go through them, and that will be moving on into a certificate program within the undergraduate college. So we have a training facility over in one of our farms. We're a land-grant university in a state that's is all rural, actually. It's 100% rural. And so we have a few farms, and we have a beautiful training facility that they allowed us to have on one of the farms. And that's where most of the training goes on.
Okay. Again, this is for me. Lord, forgive me that I would ask personal questions. Maybe somebody else might want to know, but and I didn't think about this before. I'd ask you offline. Who is the program director for that?
It's a partnership between a nonprofit organization called the Human Animal Bond that raises the that they obtain the dogs, they maintain the dogs medically and with food, et cetera, raise them, and provide them for the training program. Now, Gene Mead, who is the person I was talking about, actually co-founded it and continues to run that part of the program. Within the college itself, it's in what we call the Davis College of Agriculture. Matt Davis is a faculty member that heads that part up, but the trainer extraordinaire is a woman by the name of Lindsay Parenti, who is completing her doctorate right now in animal something or other. I can't remember now. She's an extraordinary animal behaviorist.
Okay. I ask because I've been toying with the idea of submitting a program and continuing ed to some of our universities around here. And, you know, that to go with the obedience training and, you know, those things that are already at a lot of schools. So, you know, being as it's already out there, there's already syllabi out there and curriculum out there and all that, I don't have to recreate. I can just invest. And I don't mind spending a little money, so I don't have to use a bunch of time.
That's true.
Why I ask that. And there might be somebody else listening that maybe in West Virginia. I know I do have several folks that listen from the West Virginia group. And, you know, they might want to know more about that program. And, you know, maybe some will call the school and see if they can't get involved.
Yeah, we have we're fortunate. We have a couple of veterans facilities and hospitals in our state. One's only about a half an hour, 45 minutes away from us, so that works out nicely for us to connect to veterans in the community. We've had a number of them in our handlers course that I was in just recently, which is great.
Super, super. Now, let's get to the skinny skinny, because we're here for a reason, and we chit-chat a little bit, get comfortable, let people know, hey, this lady might know what she's talking about. We should probably listen to her.
Oh.
And so let's talk about some of this research and some of the pros and cons, and maybe bust some myths or something. I don't want you to read your abstract, but talk to us a little bit, like, you know, maybe we don't have doctorate degrees, but we are interested. And tell us what you know from the research standpoint.
First of all, I actually went into it with a bias that I was a dog lover. So I freely admitted that to the world, which is something that's important. I actually went into it relatively naive about what it took to actually have a service dog. I grew up around people with disabilities, but when I was growing up, the only people who had dogs were people who had guide dogs, people who were blind who had guide dogs. So I have since discovered that they do extraordinary things and are very helpful in helping people achieve a goal. One guy told me, he said, you know, you have to remember, most of us didn't think that we would be able to work because of our disabilities, and then got a dog, and over time they helped us develop such a level of independence that we were able to suddenly go, wait a minute, maybe I can go to work. Now what do I do? So I wanted to take the tack that everybody should think that they may have to go to work with their dog, and what would that look like as they made their choices in their career or where they wanted to work or what kind of dog they were getting, et cetera. And it was a great deal of fun, but an extraordinary learning experience for me to watch just how varied the services were that dogs were able to provide. I talked to a woman who had her third service dog. She actually runs. These people have given me permission to share more than about who they are. She founded the International Assistance Dog Week, and that's how I got to know her. Actually, I found most of the people through Facebook. It was hard to actually access the population because there's no registry of service dog users out there, but it seems like a lot of people are on Facebook with their animals. And she talks very freely about the fact that her first dog, when she got her, she was said, I remember I was sitting in a mall with her, and I was waiting on my husband to pick me up because she was a wheelchair user, and she said, up to that point, I didn't drive because I was very concerned that I might drop my keys, something may happen on the road, I didn't feel safe, and this was pre-cell phone days. And so she said, she was suddenly sitting down there, and she said, I looked at Ramona and said, you know what, we can do this. We don't need no stinking man, I think is the way she said it, to drive us around. So she ended up becoming extremely independent, went on to run her own business very successfully, and again, a major contributor to the world. She's written one of the few guidebooks for service dog users. I have it on my website at servicedogsintheworkplace.com. I think it's called just Guide Dogs, Guidebook to Service Dogs. And I met a woman who had Parkinson's and used a Great Dane for stability. And watching those two in tandem was like grace in action, because she was also a yoga teacher. Great yoga, modified her yoga practice for people who had conditions like Parkinson's, and was teaching it. And another woman who had lifelong medical issues because of a seizure disorder, was having 30 or so seizures a week, broken her collarbone, her arm, her nose, et cetera, and they were helping her out at work by providing what we call natural supports, where people were checking in on her. But it had gotten to a point that they felt like she was going to have to medically retire, which she didn't. There was no one to watch her at home, So her supervisor suggested a service dog, and they got the dog. She got the dog and had had her for about 5 months when I interviewed her, and was down to 4 seizures a week. And the dog just responds. He doesn't. She doesn't alert, but she's becoming more and more familiar with the key signs. And I asked her what the difference was, and she said, I think it's just because I don't have to be stressed that something may happen and no one will be there to help me. And I met a woman who was a teacher and had a diabetic alert Labrador, and black Labrador is absolutely adorable. And in fact, I couldn't even carry on the interview because I was so fascinated watching this dog alert her. The dog was helping her. She had actually worked with the trainers in Albuquerque, New Mexico, to help them determine if a dog could alert even when somebody's sugar levels were changing, not having gone to a high or low. So she was able to show me that her levels were staying within a normal range, which is next to impossible for somebody with her condition. And I had to laugh because at one point the dog looked at her, did a like this, laid down in a circle, circled around, put his back to her, and I said, "What was that about?" And he goes, "Well, I know I'm okay right now, so when he alerts me, I'm not responding by doing something. So he just got mad at me because I won't listen to him, so he's not going to smell it anymore. He figures I know enough now." But it just, like I said, and then the woman who's using her dog for psychiatric support went from 27 medications to 1 and is now not taking any, and training her second dog. And 2 of these were owner-trained dogs and 3 were programmed dogs. So I did meet one woman who had a service dog when I met with her, another teacher for diabetic alert, whose dog was aging out. So I learned a lot about how you have to be very conscious of how, you know, that at some point your dogs do get older and that they may not be as able to help you as they were before. And there's that period of time when you have to transition. And it's difficult for people with who have been using their dog for a number of years. And when they lose their dogs, the woman I was telling you about with the International Assistance Dog Week was writing a book on the grief process when you lose your service dog. And she was having an extreme difficulty even writing the book after having lost her first soul, what I call a soul dog, some 15 years ago. So it's an amazing bond between human and animal that just creates grand opportunities. I think the best part was talking to the employers, the supervisors, the coworkers, and finding out how they felt about having this dog. It overall, I didn't meet anybody that had an issue with. Well, one woman had somebody who had come into leadership who was afraid of dogs, and so there were some issues there, but they were working through. But overall, people would say that the stress level in the office was just lower, even if they knew they couldn't pet or interact with the dog. It was just seeing the dog walked in made them smile. And one office actually had called me because I happened to know one of the person's coworkers and said, you know, we have an issue. We have getting a service dog and we're a little worried about him. Like, okay. And I get on my hat of, okay, what's the issue? What's the problem? And she said, we're all dog lovers and we don't know how we're going to do it to have a dog in the office all the time and not like get down on the floor and roll around with it or something. So I thought for a moment, and I said, well, you know, when I was interviewing people, that one of the things they talked about were dogs needed breaks. And I know humans need breaks at the same time. Maybe the person who's got the dog, and you could talk to the trainer and find out if it would be okay if you were the person that took them out for a break and played ball with them or something for 10 or 15 minutes while that person was able to take their own break. And that's what they ended up doing. So I think she was telling me that, and I can't even imagine walking in the middle of this not knowing what was going on. She said that all of a sudden you'd hear Winston's naked, and everybody starts to run to see if they can be the person to take him out and take the dog out to play. And that's because he was unvested and he was ready to play a little bit. So I'm sitting here thinking about an office, walking in an office and hearing Winston's naked running up and down through the hall. Be interesting. So it's great sense of humor among people who use dogs. So it warms your heart and soul. I mean, it's a very natural, very organic way of finding support, and you get more than just a dog that can help you. I mean, a being that can help you with some of your medical conditions. You have a partner in life, somebody that can make you laugh and will be there for you. It's really amazing. So the first thing I did was kind of the boring part. I did called concept mapping, pattern matching, and I'm not even going to get into that one. It's basically a brainstorming process that we then organized into categories, and we came up. They had 68, I think, elements that categorized into what we call six clusters. One thing that was important was dog preparation. All the dogs I met were trained. Even if they were owner trained, that person had engaged professional trainers in the process. A couple of them talked about what we call offered behaviors, where they had a dog and the dog had started to do things. I met one woman at one of the training facilities who had a gorgeous black German Shepherd, and she had severe migraines to the point that when they would come on, she would be down for like 7 days in excruciating pain. And one day she noticed that her dog was coming up to her. She said, I'd be laying on the couch, and he'd come up and he'd start pawing my eyes where her migraines start. And within 3 hours, my migraines would start. So she started taking her medication when the dog started pawing her eyes. And now she said that she might be down a day or a little longer, but the pain is extremely manageable. And she took their dog in to a trainer to just shore up the commands and the response and make sure that the dog was, you know, properly trained as a service dog. So it's just how they're prepared and what they're capable of doing, again, is, I call it magic. There's also monitoring that really, like I said, the one person whose dog was aging out had real issues. She was afraid if she left her dog at home, it would grieve itself because he wasn't with her. And somebody sometimes needs to be there to help you make some really rough decisions about the condition. And people's ability to maintain the training of the dog has to be monitored by somebody or themselves, be conscious of what they're doing. Another category was employee competence. The person's ability to be competent in explaining, you know, one of the things about the employment arena, which is different for somebody. People are used to the Americans with Disabilities Act that talks about public access and that it's your right to be able to access any place the public can go. A lot of people make the leap because going through laws is kind of I just wrote a paper on it. It's really not easy. The Title I, which provides the civil rights protection in the area of employment, doesn't give automatic access. It talks about what we call accommodation. I happen to have a major Department of Labor-funded program here attached to my department called the Job Accommodation Network. It's been in business for 30 years. And that's all they do is help employers and people figure out accommodations in the workplace for what to make it work for them. They may have a disability that means they need a special device or something like that. So for the handler or the person, the employee who has the service dog, being able to make the argument for the accommodation is a skill. You have to know the task. You need to be able to explain it to an employer. You need to understand that the employer can ask for documentation, medical information, or some other information from like a vocational rehabilitation counselor like myself who's working with to really document that, yes, indeed, this is a service dog. And There was also legal knowledge, which I just, a lot of people don't, I had a conversation not too long ago online with, around an issue that had happened to somebody who was trying to access an airplane trip and had been denied. And I said, well, the Air Carriers Act says, it's a federal act, it basically said that if you're using a psychiatric service dog or an emotional support dog, you have to, that particular airline had the rule that you have to provide a certain kind of documentation at least 48 hours before a trip. And it's, frankly, I'm sure a lot of that is, that's the one type of service dog that you can't say for sure is a service dog. You can't see a person in a wheelchair or somebody who's blind or has another obvious disability. It's more for the people with invisible disabilities. And people are obviously abusing it, particularly when you get on planes. So something about the carrier stepped in documentation, and somebody said, well, the ADA trumps that. It's a federal act that trumps that. And I said, one federal act can't trump another. A federal act can trump a state law that's more restrictive. And it's important to know not only what the federal laws are, but what the state laws are in your state. Some of them are kind of interesting, but I'll give an example. I just went to a conference in Virginia and with a service dog in training. So that I wanted the experience of having a dog for a few days in an environment that's not, Morgantown's gotten kind of extremely service dog friendly. And I also was doing a presentation, so they allowed me to take a service dog in training with me. And I looked up the state laws in West Virginia. I knew those were what they said about service dogs in training. But I went to Virginia and found they were similar, that they were allowed access with somebody who is either a trainer or continuing the training of the dog. And so I was able to give the information I needed when I needed to at the hotel. But frankly, where I was may have been just as dog friendly as this place is. And I didn't really get a whole lot of challenge. I didn't get any challenges. In fact, she almost got too much attention during the entire time. Then we had information and education. There was a real strong that belief that we need more information and more education to various populations, from the handlers and the trainers to employers, health professionals, all the people in schools. We have children who are taking service dogs into schools now. How do people address it? What are can they ask? A lot of people just aren't familiar. We think there's a lot of service dogs out there, but in some areas, some people may never, ever have seen a service dog before. And it's an ignorance, which is not a bad thing. They're just not familiar. Why would you look up something you didn't know really existed? And so to have a pretty, an extensive campaign for that would be a great idea. Coworker preparation was the other one. I told you the story about the dog that everybody was afraid that they must have all thought they were going to just spend their days pining away because they couldn't pet this gorgeous golden retriever. But there's also some people who might get jealous because they think that you don't like them if you don't let them pet your dog. There's a lot of behaviors that people put forth around service dog. I've done it. I've gone up to people who've had a Hearts of Gold dog in like a store, and some of our stores are more popular for our handlers than others. And I went up and I said, hey, it's a Hearts of Gold dog. Which one is it? And I realized I just interrupted the training that was going on, that I had actually distracted the dog, and I shouldn't do that. It's not just about petting. I have this one woman who talks to me a lot because she's in a retail store with her dog and has been chased down by people with their kids, And their coworkers aren't sure what to do because they're not sure what's going on. But everybody needs to understand what the etiquette of is around service dogs, as well as how they may be able to be of help or how they could be hindering. Some coworkers have, there could be a conflict. I remember when I worked in D.C., I happened to work above a couple floors above the President's Committee on Employment of People with Disabilities. A friend of mine was the executive director at the time, and it hit the papers that they had a conflict because they had a service dog already, then a second person wanted to bring a service dog in, and a person who had extreme phobia about dogs basically said, "You're pushing me over the edge now. I mean, one, I can manage to be, get around here with one, but two will be difficult." So they had to have a dog. They eventually created a no-dog zone for that person. A lot of people have allergies, and I used the story that I found. And it was a Canadian airline who established that, because you've got air circulating through. It's not fresh air. And people with allergies with emotional support animals was becoming a problem. So they did a study and determined that it would be sufficient to place the person with the allergy and the animal five rows apart. So that gives you a context for how you might be able to modify a work environment to make it work for the person with an allergy too. So those were the six categories and just some of the examples of the stories I've either heard or some of the elements that came up out of those out of this element. I'm putting it, I've got it on my website, but I want to put it together in some way that will help people. It's not, I don't want it to become you've got to do all 69 or 68 of these things. I want it to be, in order to prepare yourself, think about these things kind of guide. So I know that was a long drawn out one.
Yeah, let me circle back and see if you have this information on the top, because you spoke on it, but you went off of it real quick, like, and
okay.
I don't know if that's because you thought it might be too deep or what.
Mm,
but
maybe not, probably not.
You mentioned about the ADA,
mm-hmm.
and you mentioned there were other laws at work
mm-hmm.
when
mm-hmm.
talking of, I shouldn't have used the word work there, but there's other laws at play when
mm-hmm.
at work, in the
mm-hmm.
work area. Now, let me ask a question for her. Most people are familiar with Chapter 13 in the ADA, which is the service dog and access, public access.
Mm-hmm.
Were you referring to Chapter 12 in the ADA when you were talking about in the workplace, or...
I go by titles. Mm-hmm. Title 1 is employment.
Okay, Title 12,
title
I'm
two
sorry.
That's okay. Title 2 is the, I always get this public access, I think. Title 2, Title 3 may be transportation. Yeah, but, it's interesting because one of the things I found as I was doing my research is there's Americans with Disabilities Act. I remember when it was passed. Over the years, they've revised it. And they revised it to make the point about we mean service dogs. Now they include miniature horses for some things. And they also have what they call guidance documents that I don't know a lot of people understand. Recently, one came out that included, that gave some guidance that helped people who had dogs who were on property, the Veterans Administration's properties, but also gave the guidance that I think a trainer called it 4 on the floor, that a service dog should not be in a basket like a grocery cart or something like that, that it had to be on the floor walking or an emergency be carried, but you couldn't put them up. I guess a lot of people were putting their dogs up into baskets, calling them service dogs, and went around stores. So, but there's a lot of different guidance documents that have been published over the years that I always encourage people. In fact, one of the things I'm redoing my website, I'm going to have a page, and I'm going to try to create as many links to those guidance documents as possible and give a little hint as to why people may want to go and read them. Some of those, they cross over some of the different federal laws, because even though the ADA is the one that's the most associated with employment, if you're using your dog at work, there are other things you may, like I talk about the Air Carrier Act, well, some people have to fly because of their job. And so they need to know that there is this act, and it does address airline travel. And I think the one most interesting one I found when I was reviewing that was you're allowed to take more than one service dog on. Mm-hmm. And the Fair Housing Act is another one. It does accommodate service and emotional support animals, not just service dogs, but emotional support animals, too, for people in certain kinds of housing situations. But again, you can't just expect every employer to meet the criteria. I think it's a rental, more than somebody owns more than five rental units or HUD housing, that kind of thing. You're allowed, but the housing unit is allowed to ask you to provide documentation as well if they're not sure. So those are just some of the federal laws that are out there that are important for people. And the Rehab Act is also included in some of the discussion to allow some help for people who are trying to go to work with their service dogs.
Right, and there are a lot of people that are trying to do their own research and trying to be up to speed. Some of that because they're just too doggone stubborn to hire somebody to train them. But I'm not going to run down that street right now. But say real slowly, what is your webpage in case somebody might want to go and chase some of your links down?
It's servicedogsintheworkplace.com. I don't have
dogs,
these things up
D-O-G,
yet.
Or dogs, D-O-G-S.
D-O-G-S. Service, S-E-R-V-I-C-E, D-O-G-S-I-N-T-H-E-W-O-R-K-P-L-A-C-E.com. There's two interviews that I've done. One I did with the Job Accommodation Network, and it's a webinar that went out to 500 sites across the country, about an hour long, about the subject, and a number of other, when I've been able to post documents. In fact, I got a couple more articles of my own I have to put up, and any resources I think that are important, I've got to update it now. In fact, I'm trying to change the whole look of it, which takes a little time. And I want to add, now that I've gotten into understanding a little bit more about the nuances of all the legislation and the laws, and also we found a few laws, a few legal cases that were important for people to look through, because some decisions were made on mistakes, either the employer or the housing unit or the person themselves made early on. One person may have been caught or may have just made a mistake. I'm not going to try to go into which one, because I don't know the person. But had gotten a dog, called it a pet, and asked the condo association to change their no pets policy. They said no. He then decided to call it. He didn't said it was a service dog. They asked for information. He didn't give enough information. He sued them and he lost, because there was a trajectory of information there that didn't support everybody being certain that that was a service dog. So things like that are important for people to really think through as they get these dogs. I know some programs, I've talked to some programs about how they, training programs, about how they train and do they talk about work, going to work with the dog. And there's a couple people who have had, who I've talked to about being in the job, who said their trainer has they've talked to their trainer about the environment or something at work. But most of them said that's really not in their purview of what they, you know, they might do, because that's not their expertise. It's how to, you know, talk to an employer, that kind of thing. And so I want to make sure that people have as much information as they can possibly have access to the job accommodation network, and are able to make the argument for themselves quite easily. I think one of the things that I noticed and was reinforced by a couple employers, a lot of the reason why they were not uncomfortable with having a person with a service dog was because of the confidence of the person who was talking to them. They weren't aggressive. They were matter-of-fact and assertive, and it was very obvious that they were responsible for their dog. And having that assurance made them feel very comfortable in including a dog, and they were happy they had.
So basically, maybe I'm inferring, or maybe you're implying, or maybe a little bit of both, and I'm smelling what you're cooking. But I think I hear you saying that a person's disposition, a person's knowledge, and how well they communicate their knowledge has an effect on whether or not the establishment is going to be accepting of them or not.
Yeah, so. I always tell people, we talk about it in the handler's class and the class with the kids. Now, trainers know how to train a dog, and they're very good at that. Most trainers don't go into the business to train dogs because they're all that proficient with people sometimes, although I've met some really great ones who do work with people very well.
Yeah.
But how, you know, that element of usually when they spend a couple weeks with somebody and they go around the mall and they do things like that, it's focused on the person's comfortability with their ability to follow the commands, to keep the training up. They don't really get into great detail. And I've watched, even some training, people who are in training to be trainers, not all that great at interacting with people. And so one of my interests is to create educational opportunities or information for people about how do you address somebody who's coming up to you and asking about your dog. How do you say it in a way that may not prompt some aggression or assertiveness on the other side? We don't, you know, service dog users, people who have service dogs are very, very protective of their dogs, and for good reason. They're important to them. And a lot of people, because we're immersed in the service dog world, don't realize that a lot of people have no clue. And add to that, a lot of people don't even have a clue how to interact with a person with a disability effectively. And so it could be a recipe for disaster, and it has been on occasion. When you hear some stories, you're just sitting there going, how much would have been helped? Now, I know some people who are extremely proficient with people who still have problems. And a friend of mine up in Chicago got a whole training effort started at Starbucks because of an interaction. And Starbucks has been extremely responsive. And if you go into one, you'll see service dogs are welcome on the doors now. They've undergone some training with all of their people. So sometimes it's just people aren't aware of what we don't know what we don't know. And then sometimes we act out of ignorance, and that doesn't lead to great things.
Yes, there's been in the news a couple big organizations, Starbucks, Walmart, one of the big box construction stores. I'm not sure which one, so I'm not going to say either one.
Mm-hmm.
But concerning service dogs and access, Starbucks has rebounded pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
Walmart is kind of on the fence, shaky, just running scared now. And it looks like they've gone too far. And but that's just me and my position on their position. But we'll see what Walmart does.
Yeah. I walked into a Walmart. Now, granted, it's here, and we do have a service dog program here. And I walked in with a service dog that was in training, and a woman was very nice. She said, was helping me with getting a buggy out, and she's like, oh, I don't want to disturb the dog, and I know I can't touch it. And so somebody had done some training with her. She was really sweet. And, you know, large corporations have quite a task to keep everybody who's participating in any of their stores up to date on all the different ways that they have to interact with the different kinds of people that come in. Not to blame or call, I mean, I don't want to blame anybody, and sometimes some industries don't step up to the plate. I appreciate the ones that go, whoops, that was a mistake. Let's step up to the plate, and let's hope we can get more and more people aware of what all of this means. The thing that bothers me the most is how many people seem to freely let their kids run after a service dog. And I don't think any dog, much less a service dog, me that parents aren't conscious of the fact that it could be causing a problem for their child, as well as the dog reacts. The dog's the one that's in trouble, not the kid. So that's one of my least favorite things.
Yeah, that's one of the least favorite things of a whole lot of service dog handlers. And something that you did talk about just briefly a second ago, you spoke about, oh, Lord, what did you speak about? Well, you spoke about a lot of things, and usually I take notes so I know when to come back to it. But, Lord have mercy, Lord have mercy, Lord have mercy. Oh.
How far back
trainers
was it? Go ahead.
Trainers being good with training dogs, but not so good with handling people. And he said there's a lot of that, you know, they might be good with people and dogs, but they're not good. And you went on with that. And,
I probably shouldn't have said good. I mean, they're usually the ones that say, you know, I train dogs because I really don't want to have to train people. And I shouldn't say good because I have met some that are extraordinarily good who don't think they are. And I'm a counselor, and sometimes I'm not all that good with people. But I think the idea of you're a dog trainer, your responsibility and your focus is the dog and making sure the dog knows the commands, the dog is behaving correctly around people, and that the person and the dog, the person's able to take on the commands of the dog. And again, there are some programs that have a couple weeks where people come in and they spend a great time, deal of time together, and you transfer some information about lessons learned, best practices, and interacting with people. But I think, it like anything, though, all the laws and the nuances of the laws are important for people to understand as they're trying to navigate through the world. And the disability community in general has had to do that. But when it comes to service dogs, it becomes another layer that they have to learn. So it's maybe a somewhat of an unmet need right now.
Yeah.
Although
yeah,
I just found a really good site for state laws. A really good one. It was called the Animal Legal and Historical Center or Historical and Legal Center that I found when I was preparing a presentation. I can't get back online to find it, but it's a great site for just understanding all the state laws that might be out there.
And that's good for people like myself who train people from several different states. But you know, anybody wanting state laws can contact their state, and their state has them. And for a lot of people, that's a lot easier, and they're familiar with how to navigate their state offices on the computer as opposed to finding or Googling state laws on, you know, the computer and having to go through several other things.
I think you might be surprised that most people don't know where to go to find out their state laws. That's one of the things that I've learned from some people is they just sometimes don't know where to go for the right information or to know if the site they're on is the right, has up-to-date information, too. So, I mean, it's kind of, particularly if you're just traveling through, I've tried to weed through some state codes, and to be able to go to a site that goes directly to the state code that's appropriate is kind of nice. It really is.
Okay. Let me say this.
Mm-hmm.
Part of my history, and I know I'm not like most, but, you know, I trained dogs as a young person and, you know, as a young adult and on through. And I also taught people, and I also did therapy with people.
Mm-hmm.
And I also trained dogs and did behavioral work with dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And I also did marriage and family work. And a light came on in my head that said, you know what? All this could go together.
Mm-hmm.
Because
mm-hmm.
I am real good with people. I am real good with dogs. I do understand that the problem most of the time is not the dog, it's the person.
Mm-hmm.
And I am one of those persons, one of those people that would say, I'd much rather work with the dog than to work with these people. It's why I no longer do talk therapy, because I am so tired of people. If a dog mm-hmm. comes to you with an issue, and you correct the issue, the dog looks at you, the dog says, hey, thanks. I was troubled. You helped me through it. The person looks at you and says, but, and what about, and is like, I don't want to hear that. You know the answer. You know the solution. Use it. Don't use it. No, I don't want to see you next week. I don't want to see you anymore. Go. Why do you come in here every week if you're not hearing me? And if you won't go where I want you to go. But a dog will take the training. A dog says, thank you, sir. I was wondering how to go about doing this.
Mm-hmm.
May I please have a treat? And so for me, you know, I say it all the time, you know, and I do. I work. What I do is I train my clients how to work with dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And I train the dog. Because no matter how well I train the dog, when it leaves me, goes home with the client, if they're not working with that dog right, if they're not listening to the dog, then in a year when it's time to reevaluate the dog, I got
mm-hmm.
garbage.
Mm.
And so if I'm not working with the people, then the dog is not going to be as beneficial to the people as
mm-hmm.
I would want it to be.
Mm-hmm.
And the dog is not getting the care that I want it to get.
Right. And I'm not saying that trainers aren't really, really good at that. I just think sometimes...
Some trainers aren't.
I'm not going to... That's not my area of expertise, nor would I go there. But I think it's important for people to be able to move consciously and mindfully through all of the... I think a lot of... Sometimes people might get into having a dog and not understand just what it means to have that dog day in and day out with them. Even when you're in a bad mood, you got to be able to make sure the dog is, you know, taken well care of. Although, that's the other thing I've enjoyed hearing. A guy that I interviewed in something else who had a dog, he said, you know, I was out partying, drinking all the time and feeling really crappy. I got the dog, and I said, you know, I quit all that because I had to make sure that I could take care of my dog. I thought, okay, if that stopped destructive behavior, go for it, babe. That's perfect to know about. So, particularly for younger people.
Yeah. Younger people. On that one, I'm going to say, ooh, look at the time.
It's 9 o'clock.
We have run short on time. Now, let me tell you, the real deal is, I've got another hour, and I'll let you talk for the whole hour. I could just do this, which I do need to do. If anybody has a question or comment that they'd like to bring up and call in and ask Margaret, you can call in at 646-668-2499. Press the number 1 on the keypad of your phone, and that will let me know that you have a question or comment. If not, we'll go ahead and we'll bring this to a close, and we'll give you just a little bit of time to make that call if you so choose to make the call. Now, Margaret, I have put them on notice, and that's, of course, if you're willing to answer questions or take a comment, and that's great. If anybody calls, they call. If they don't, they don't. But in the meantime, I have let you go kind of free, and that's the way I do. But there might be something you might have had a note on or wanted to get in that maybe you didn't get in. And now's the time to give some closing remarks and make sure that you make the pitches that you wanted to make, to make sure that the community hears what you wanted them to hear.
Well, you know, one of the things I would like to say, one of the hardest parts for me in doing my research was accessing people and having people actually participate in research. There's not a lot of research going on around service dogs. If somebody reaches out to you, you need to know that hearing from you, researchers are reaching out to you because they don't want to make assumptions based on their experience. They want to make observations based on the people they consider experts, and those are the people who are using trained, depending on the subject matter, who live day in and day out with service dogs. So make sure that when you get an email or you find somebody who's asked you to do research, take the time, answer it, because your voices can make a difference in a lot of things, including laws. But if you don't participate, we sort of like voting, if you don't participate, we don't know what you have to say. And that would be one of my big requests, is no matter who, you know, if somebody who has all the appropriate credentials, has human subjects approval to do the project, and you believe is doing something close, near and dear to your heart, participate. It does make a difference. It really does. I've been trying to do the same study I did with service dogs for medical alert mobility for guide dog users, and I haven't exactly been extraordinarily successful in getting people to participate. So it's kind of like, it's frustrating because you really want to be able to be helpful to people.
Indeed, and I understand what you're saying, and I certainly agree. Uh-huh. I have a lot of the same trouble trying to find guests that would be willing
to
share.
We're trying to fill up one night every night.
There you go. Well, 5 nights a week, and it gets difficult and gets frustrating. So I say, you know what? This is for us, by us, and if we don't want to do it, then fine. I'm not going to stress and invest my time, money, and energy and stress myself out over it. But the community, you know, has its people that are teachers, and they love to teach. You know, they feel like, hey, it's my job to teach people, you know, whether it be the law, whether it be etiquette, whether it be, you know, different things. And there's other people that are militant. You know, this is me, mine. You know, you don't have a right to that. You know, why are you asking me that? You know, have you ever heard of HIPAA? You know, and just all this kind of stuff. And so you get all kind of people. And then you have the people with the psychiatric service dogs. Now think about it. They have these dogs for a reason, because they need them. And so many things trigger them, and sometimes they stay triggered, so anything could take them off. So it's really hard to find people who will talk to you, who don't feel threatened by you.
What? Oh, I have to say, once I got my key informants in my interviews, I'm amazed at how many people they were able to draw in. I do understand people don't know me.
You're right. They don't know who you are. They don't know if you have integrity or if you have their best interests at heart. And researchers are supposed to be unbiased, and they're supposed to give evidence of their findings, no matter what they are. But, you know, not everybody trusts that. I can understand that. I really do.
Totally.
Yeah, not everybody knows the process that researchers go through, and not everybody understands Chapter 5 in the dissertation. And so,
yeah, I tell you, it takes about 6 months to just get to the point where we can talk to people on the other end of work. So it's thorough, and for good reason. It's thorough for very good reason, for the protection of the person that we're reaching out to, so that they can feel comfortable with. And so I can appreciate that. It just doesn't take a long time. Just a little patience through the process.
Well, that's absolutely all correct.
Mm-hmm.
And I am wondering if you're all out of air, if you're all out of steam, if you happy with what you did,
I think it's been great. I appreciate the opportunity, and I love to talk about this subject. I really do.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. I don't want you to feel like I cut you off. I don't want you talking badly about me over there on campus.
I think I got an appropriate amount out for a radio interview. People can go online and learn some more and even interact with me if they want to by email or by phone. And always looking for suggestions for other lines of research that people feel like are necessary as well. So just let us.
Well, great. I don't want, you know, to come on the West Virginia University campus and you hear my name, and then people all of a sudden don't want to talk to me anymore. It's like, oh, no, you treated Dr. Glenn terribly. We're not going to talk to you.
I don't think anybody's going to say that. You've been very generous. I appreciate it.
There you go. That's what I want. I want to mention Dr. Margaret Glenn, and they say, oh, yeah, she speaks so highly of you. Yeah, what can we do for you? See, that's what I want. That's what I want there.
Mm-hmm.
And let me say thank you so much, Margaret, for coming on and for sharing with us some of your findings and research and some of your personal position as a researcher from what you have gleaned. And I do believe it could be helpful for a lot who may listen, who may be listening now or may be listen later on podcasts. And I do appreciate you giving your information where they could check out your webpage and maybe touch base with you. They might have a further question later, or they might have, you know, a direction that they might want to ask you to go or something. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
I am glad that you took the opportunity and you said yes when I asked you if you'd like a turn in the barrel. Also, I'd like to thank all you wonderful people out there listening, and you continue to listen. And let me ask you to press on the follow button, because I have many, many more listeners than I do followers. And if I had more followers, then I would know better that you're there, and you would know when the shows are coming on, who's coming on, and what their topic might be. And so it's not that difficult to press the follow button. It says follow, and you could just press it. And it's not like I'm Jesus and you're following me. It's like it's the show and you're following the show. So you can do that, and that would be great. And that way I know that you're there. I'm not going to send you anything except for notices of what the next shows are. So we appreciate you, and we appreciate you, and we appreciate you sharing with your friends and getting more people on board here at All About Service Dogs at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. And gather back with us tomorrow when we'll have another exciting guest. and they will be sharing with us from their experience, and I will even tell you who they are. Tomorrow, we will have Mike Dalton, and Mike Dalton will be talking to us about Guild Assist Dog Partners, and that is his organization, and he will talk about the types of service dogs they do, and they basically do guide dogs, and so we'll get that from his point of view, so tune in. And having said that, you know I love you.
Good.
I want you to love your dog and love one another. And let's be back here another time. Take care and good night.